Morning Edition begins a new series today, and at last we have one from someone who is unconcerned with gardening and has little interest in the changing face of America, and sadly couldn't care less about the moist and often sticky locales where certain journalists are sent on radio expeditions. No, in the coming weeks, we'll be hearing from writer David Sedaris about life in Paris, where he's lived for 2 years.
When asked to account for the time I've spent in Paris, I reach for my carton of ticket stubs and groan beneath its weight. I've been here for more than a year, and while I still haven't seen the Louvre or the Pantheon, I have seen the Alamo and the bridge over the River Kwai. Aside from an occasional trip to the flea market, my knowledge of Paris is limited to what I learned in Gigi. When visitors come from the United States, I draw up little itineraries. If we go to the 3 o'clock Operation Petticoat, that should give us enough time to make it across town for the 6 o'clock screening of It Is Necessary to Save the Soldier Ryan. Unless, of course, you'd rather see the 4 o'clock Regals of Red Gap and the 7 o'clock Roman Holiday. Me, I'm pretty flexible, so why don't you decide? Given the choice between 4 perfectly acceptable movies, my guests invariably opt for a walk through the Picasso Museum or a tour of the cathedral, saying, I didn't come all the way to Paris so I can sit in the dark. They make it sound so bad. Yes, I say, but this is the French dark. It's darker than the dark we have back home. In the end, I give them a map and a spare set of keys. They see Notre Dame. I see the Hunchback of Notre Dame. I'm often told that it's wasteful to live in Paris and spend all my time watching American movies. That it's like going to Cairo to eat cheeseburgers. You could do that back home, people say. But they're wrong. I couldn't live like this in the United States. With very few exceptions, video killed the American revival house. If you want to see a Boris Karloff movie, you have to rent it and watch it on a television set. In Paris, it costs as much to rent a movie as it does to go to the theater. On any given week, one has more than 300 pictures to choose from, at least a third of them in English. There are all the recent American releases, along with any old movie you'd ever want to see. On Easter, having learned that the greatest story ever told was sold out, I just crossed the street and saw Superfly, the second greatest story ever told. Within a 5-block radius of my apartment, there are 4 first-run multiplexes and a dozen 30 to 50-seat revival houses. These are the mom-and-pop theaters willing to proceed with the 2 o'clock showing of The Honeymoon Killers, even if I'm the only one in the house. It's as if someone has outfitted his den with a big screen and comfortable chairs. Like the restaurants with only 3 tables, I often wonder how some of these places manage to stay open. The woman at the box office sells you a ticket, rips it in half, and hands you the stub. Inside the theater, you're warmly greeted by a hostess who examines your stub and tears it just enough to make her presence felt. Somewhere along the line, someone decided that this activity is worthy of a tip, so you give the woman some change, though I've never known why. It's a mystery, like those big heads on Easter Island, or the popularity of the teeny-weeny knapsack. I've never considered myself an across-the-board apologist for the French, but there's a lot to be said for an entire population that never, under any circumstances, talks during a movie. I've sat through Saturday night slasher movies with audiences of teenagers, and even then nobody has said a word. I can't remember the last time I've enjoyed silence in an American movie theater. It's easy to believe that our audiences spend the day saying nothing, actually saving their voices for the moment the picture begins. At an average New York screening, I once tapped the shoulder of the man in front of me, interrupting his spot review to ask if he planned on talking through the entire movie. Well, yeah. What about it? He said this with no trace of shame or apology. It was as if I'd asked if he planned to circulate his blood or draw air into his lungs. Gee, why wouldn't I? I moved away from the critic and found myself seated beside a clairvoyant, who loudly predicted the fates of the various characters seen moving their lips up on the screen. Next came an elderly couple, constantly convinced that they were missing something. A stranger would knock on the door, and they'd ask, "Who's he?" I wanted to assure them that all their questions would be answered in due time, but I don't believe in talking during the movies, so I moved again. Sitting in Paris and watching my American movies, I feel the exact opposite of homesick. The camera glides over the cities of my past, capturing their energetic skylines just before they're destroyed by the terrorist's bomb or advancing alien warship. New York, Chicago, San Francisco. It's like seeing pictures of people I know I could still sleep with if I wanted to. When the high-speed chases and mandatory shootouts become too repetitive, I head over to the revival houses and watch gentler movies in which the couples sleep in separate beds and everyone wears a hat. As my ticket is ripped, I'll briefly consider all the constructive things I could be doing. I think of the parks and the restaurants, of the pleasantries I'll never use on the friends I am failing to make. I think of the great city teeming on the other side of that curtain. And then the lights go down. And finally, I love Paris.
Writer David Sedaris, whose most recent book is Me Talk Pretty One Day, produced for Morning Edition by Mary Wiltenberg and Ira Glass.